Heather Morrell is not a personally relatable character, but the fact that she also bleeds from her eyes when someone tries to teach her math was definitely a sell to me. If that's not enough, there's also a butchy sociopath, a very mean librarian wizard, a not furry werewolf, a weird blonde girl, and an eldritch horror who's into physics and young women. This week we discussed the first 4.5 arcs of Catalepsis by Hazel Young. Join us as we watch this non-cult do very non-culty things, and, you know, gay things.
Welcome to In Media Lives, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we will be discussing Catalepsis by Hazel Young. Specifically, we will be focusing on the first 4 arcs, which are mind correlating through The Other Side of Nowhere, which were just released serendipitously on audiobook and ebook this week. So now is a great time to become a Catalepsis fan. If you had to describe this, Val, how would you describe it?
It's like a not racist Cthulhu, gay romance adventure fun time. I don't know. I'm actually not a horror fan, so I haven't read a lot of like horror genre
and
stories.
Yet you made me read a horror book.
I did?
Yeah. What was it called? Haunting.
Oh, but it was very gay. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that overrides the horror for you as long as it's gay.
Yes, because I'm a massive chicken.
Okay,
but this doesn't count. Okay, this is very cool.
I feel like this one is not scary though. Just to be clear,
I don't think I've ever read a scary horror. Like, there are scary, like, movies are a different thing. Like, I will not watch ghost movies because, ugh.
Because Val is a ghost.
I don't like engaging with anything that has anything remotely related to how I am. But regardless, like, yeah, I haven't read anything that's actually scary. The cool thing about Catalepsis overall, what I've read so far, I finished the 4 arcs, I've finished the 5th one too, but we're not going to discuss it here, which we should actually, but we won't. It's very visual, and it's like, sometimes it's visceral, but not very. I think it's the visual element of it that I really, really love so far. It's clear to picture all of the horrors, even when the point of it is to not be able to picture them. I don't know, like, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I think, okay, what is the thing with, like, Lovecraftian horror and about depicting it in any kind of medium is that one of the whole points of the horror is that it's incomprehensible on some level to the human mind. Like, the whole point is that there are things out there that we cannot comprehend, that it when we see them or perceive them or a shadow of them, a distorted funhouse mirror, you know, looking through a peephole, Plato's cave-esque vision of whatever this larger concept of this being, this entity is, that it is so maddening, that is incomprehensible to our mm-hmm. brains.
Yeah.
And that creates a problem, because, like, if you're making a movie about Call of Cthulhu or something, and you need to depict this indescribable horror, the audience wants to see the horror, right? Like, you know, like,
yeah,
you want to reveal at some point. Like, people, at a certain point, people want to know what it looks like. It's just our human experience is like, if we keep hearing all about, I don't know, like the Babadook or, you know, the girl from the ring or something, you like, it's just instinctual that, like, we're curious. We want to know what they look like for reals. Yeah, I get what you're saying, which is that, like, Hazel, the author, does a very good job of, like, describing both kind of the horrors that lurk in this Lovecraftian world. But I think also importantly, she does a really good job of showing the consequences of perceiving those horrors on people. Like, people do not just see this and scream. Like, people are sick. People are vomiting blood. People are, you know, just like having all sorts of negative reactions. It's breaking their brains to perceive this. And I think that is really important and really essential. And it's something that sometimes I feel like Lovecraftian inspired horror misses.
I think that what really makes it work is how it reflects on the normal. Like, we see that negative print and not the actual thing, just like you said.
Yeah.
And we see that by observing how around them, like, they're in college.
Yes.
Life is very, very normal for them.
Knife is very normal for them, yep.
I'm not your friend anymore. Like, Heather constantly has essays to write, and she's, like, talking about literature or whatever, right? Even Evelyn, I think, at some point had, like, homework or something.
Yeah.
So around them, everything is very normal. They go to libraries, a lot of libraries, because Heather's a nerd. You know, there's...
They're all nerds, but...
Yeah. There are restaurants, whatever. They're out in the real world, but it's written in such a way that it's so detached from the real world. And we only see the effect it has on, of course, the characters that are on a page. But also, it's like, Evelyn is physically messed up.
Yeah.
Like, very, very physically messed up.
Yep.
Her body is broken in a lot of aspects. Heather spends, like, 90% of the story being physically sick to her stomach and, like, bleeding out of her eyes or whatever. Rain is a different story.
Well, we know that she's a sociopath.
Yes, which I like and also have thoughts on.
Okay. Well, first, let's do the plot summary, because we've mentioned all these people, and we should mention who they are.
Let's just jump right in. Who cares? We can just get right into the meat. No, go ahead.
I will be really quick about it. So, Heather is an 19-year-old. I forget, but she's a college student who goes to college in this made-up town called Sheriffford, I think. She thinks she's got schizophrenia. She sees monsters that no one else can see. Lovecraftian horrors that are throughout, you know, just going about their daily business, whatever a horror does all day, every day. But she sees them everywhere. She meets Rain, who is also a student there and who actually works with Evelyn, Evie, who is a mage, a witch, a spellcaster of some sort. There's a bit
very
of...
Very cool.
Very cool. There's a bit of, like, a process of them acclimating to each other and getting to know each other, but Hazel actually... Not Hazel, sorry. That's the author. Heather actually demonstrates the ability to do... Basically, like, mind magic or, like, interdimensional mathematics or hyperdimensional mathematics or whatever they call it. There is also some German
word. She's a rocket scientist.
Yes. She can basically understand the higher rules of mathematics that govern our reality in an intuitive sense, and therefore do stuff like travel to different planes of existence. I mean, or write people out of existence or rewrite the laws of gravity momentarily and make someone's head explode. So, like, she's got these powers, but there's consequences. You know, like, when you change reality, it snaps back and it has consequences. It's difficult for her. And she's also perceiving reality at a level that people aren't meant to. And so it has biological consequences.
Yeah.
They also meet Twill, who is amazing. Werewolf and amazing in every way. Basically, her family are from a cult that worships one of these horrors, these extra dimensional beings. And her grandfather experimented on her and got her merged with a werewolf-ish spirit. But makes her basically invincible, and she's really cool.
And she has cool tattoos.
Yes.
And she is not aware of anything happening. She's always very lost.
She's not aware, but she is a werewolf. God.
Oh, God.
You were like setting me up for that. You have no one to blame.
It was an accident, but I appreciate it.
You have no one to blame but yourself. Anyways, so the
I'll take that as a compliment.
The thing driving the plot forward is that Heather had a sister growing up, a twin sister, and yet one night they were abducted by this extra dimensional being that she calls the Eye, and the Eye took her sister and implanted in Heather this ability to perceive extra dimensionality and to do this math, and basically wrote her sister out of existence. So when she came back to reality, no one remembered her sister existed except for her.
And also it seems like metaphysically the world changed around them.
Yes.
To like, make up for that absence.
Yeah, like no clothes, no like grades. It's like that. It's like the sister never existed. Mm-hmm. Heather gets some evidence that her sister might still be alive despite being with the Eye in this place. They call it the outside. That's basically any kind of plane of existence that's not Earth. Like the normal one is the outside. And she gets some evidence that her sister's still alive. And she meets Evelyn, the witch, and Rain, who's kind of the bodyguard. But I think that kind of sells her short. I feel like Rain is brilliant.
Rain is the enabler. I feel like...
I'm trying to think of, like, the word for her.
Bodyguard doesn't quite do it.
She's also just, like, very...
She's the unhinged vice president.
I would almost call her, like, a warlord. If that, like, she's so good at, like, motivating people and getting people ready for action and breaking things down into like, okay, we've got this thing that we have to do. Now what's the plan? Like she's really good. Like she's like a military leader on some level. Like she sees
a
problem.
Yes. Very practical.
And she's also a really skilled combatant. There's one scene where I think she goes up against three or four guys who are bigger than her and this wipes the floor with them and they barely even get a hit in on her. Rain is really cool. Heather is very attracted to Rain, and that progresses over the course of the arcs.
Heather is a horny little child. She is...
Just to be clear, she is an adult.
Yes.
We're not sexualizing children on this podcast.
Absolutely not.
Yes.
My God. She is very, very gay and very horny all the time. About everyone.
I'm not even going to say anything about
You're way ahead of me because I'm only on 5.
Yeah, but anyway.
But wow.
Yes, Heather just...
The girl has been repressed for all of her life, and now she's crazy not. And
she just, you know, she's making up for lost time.
She sure is.
And why not when you can do extra-dimensional magic in your head?
Get it, girl.
Yeah. Anyway, so as part of their kind of journey into trying to learn more about Heather's sister and what happened to her, they come into contact with a cult in Sherrowford. And the leader of this cult, Alex, and his sister, Lozzie. His sister is actually similar to Heather, not identical, but similarly able to kind of easily travel between realities.
Yeah, she has an aspect of a greater being inside of her, just like Heather does.
But it's different. Like, Heather can do things that Lozzie can't do, and Lozzie is better at other... Like, I forget if this is laid out, so we might have to censor this, but I think Lozzie is better at, like, communicating with spirits, and Heather is better at kind of the math. Is that laid out? If not, we'll have to cut that out. Okay. I forget.
Heather is very theoretical and
and
like the hard science of it, whereas Lozzie is very dreamlike and practical, I would say.
Yeah, it's intuitive to her.
Yeah.
The cult, basically, they're led by this Alexander, who is Lozzie's brother, but they do not get along. Basically, Lozzie is being held captive by her brother. And
he's the Lex Luthor.
Yeah, he's definitely the villain who kind of sees himself as doing a necessary evil. Like, he's like, can't you see that? He gives this speech like, you know, humanity is a dead end. We're going to go extinct from climate change. And meanwhile, there's this whole, you know, outside that's beyond reality, that if we could just get there and like if the human race could like ascend to something greater, then it's what's the word? Diabolism? Is that like when you want to sacrifice things for power? I don't know. Like, it's like that. Sure. He basically thinks it's worth it to kill people, to sacrifice people, to, you know, turn people into zombies, do whatever it takes to get humanity to this higher level of being. Of course, when he says humanity, he seems to mostly mean himself, but like, so it's not necessarily a selfless act that he is performing here, even if he thinks he's being helpful to the human race. Along with that, there's some characters that are introduced who are what are called demons, or kind of these higher dimensional beings. Zhang is one of them. She's awesome. She's basically like, I don't know what to describe her as. Just like this wall of...
She's a Terminator.
Yeah, she's a Terminator. That's a great way of playing. She's a Terminator. She's wonderful and terrifying. And then there's Prem, who is a maid robot. She's like an anime character.
She is. And I love her.
Yes. Who doesn't love Prem? She always knows the right thing to say, even though she can barely say many words, but she always
knows.
That's
more Arc 5, really.
Okay. I'll be quiet.
Okay. Yeah, stop it, Chloe.
Okay, I'm trying. You know, like, I remember what happened in each of these arcs, but it's kind of hard to remember because I read it a couple months ago, the exact character development.
Can't you isolate everything that happened in each individual arc separately? Come on.
I can try. But anyways, the long and short of it is in this kind of arc, they defeat Alexander, they save Lazi, and the cult is sent back to lick its wounds. And they're still left no closer to finding Heather's sister. Yeah, that's the summary. Now we can talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Who's your favorite character?
Oh my gosh. Evelyn, by far.
Yes.
I love Evie so much. So to describe her, she's a person with some disabilities. She's missing a leg. I forget what else.
Part of her arm.
She's definitely had a tough life, and she's very mean, but like heart of gold type, like rough exterior, heart of gold, maybe. And
very closed off.
Very closed off, very focused on just reading her books. And definitely the first two arcs, I think, primarily are focused on Heather getting to know Evelyn and like them becoming friends, because Rain is very like fast friends with Heather, but Evelyn takes some doing, and totally understandable her paranoia as a witch. We learn that, you know, like a magician, she's basically just like, if anyone finds out that she's a magician, other magicians will come and basically kill her because they want her knowledge. They'll kill her and take her stuff.
Yeah, because she is from a very powerful family, and she inadvertently learned from probably the most powerful wizard, mage, witch.
Yeah.
What was her mom?
Magician, I think is the word they use. Yeah.
Her family, like, the aptitude of their magic is far beyond what we've seen so far, at least what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
She's really cool.
Yeah, and I like the way magic is handled in this world, that, like, it's not like Dungeons and Dragons where it's like, I know how to cast Fireball, and I'm just going to cast it up to 3 times per day. Instead, it is very Lovecraftian in the sense that it is like, casting a spell is basically like, we're doing something we're not supposed to. We're hacking into reality. And there, we don't understand why it works the way it does, because we're not smart enough. Like, we know that it works in the same sense that we know that, like, a, you know, a Bronze Age person knew how to make a fire, but they didn't know the physics behind, like, what a fire was. And that's the same way magic works here. And so, like, and when they do it, it always has a cost involved. I think there's one spell that Evie casts, and she says afterwards, like, oh, it caused me to bleed from the throat, which is just really a gross image. It's really cool how magic works. Like, it's very powerful, and she can do some really cool things with it. But there is and a cost involved.
Having Heather there to see the math behind it is also very interesting, because it gives us this window into it. Like, when she first sees a few of the magic circles that Evie has around the house, Heather's like, oh, something about that math is not correct.
Yeah.
Don't know what it is, can't look at it because my brain is going to explode, but something about it is a little bit off.
Yeah.
And we know from Evelyn's side of the story as well that this is all trial and error, and all of this magic stuff is refined to the point where it's at through a lot of prices being paid.
Right. Like, I think it's made clear that most of the people doing research on this, you know, it drives them insane. Like, it makes them lose their sanity at a certain point. Yes,
and also become inhuman to a large extent.
Yes, because, like, part of this is realizing that humanity are insects to a larger world, but not even, like, bacteria.
Yeah, I think that's a better, better description.
The world that is actually surrounding us is so vast and outside of anything that we could even comprehend as this little one-celled organism.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you start thinking that, you start realizing that humanity just doesn't have any meaning. And that's why, they kind of lose their humanity.
Evelyn is also my favorite.
Oh, okay, I was just about to ask.
I interrupted you there. She's also my favorite. I love women who are a little insane and mean and real broken. Those are the best characters.
As someone who plays D&D with Val, I can confirm.
Oh, wait, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's just girl bossing it. Yeah. She's done some very unpleasant things to her friends and said a lot of mean things to, like, Twill especially.
Yeah.
Which is great. That.
What do you think about her relationship with Twill, Evelyn's?
They do get into it a little bit in Arc 5, which we're not going to discuss because the first four arcs encompass a storyline and feels a little more. It's better to talk about, I think, just the first four. But from those first four, not counting the conversations and discussions of the next arc, I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
When Heather pointed it out, only after I, like, kept a little bit of an eye on it. Evelyn is definitely meaner to Twill than she is to anyone else. And I really like when characters are mean to characters they like. So, yeah. So for me, I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah.
I don't think it's there. And it's fair because neither does Twill or Evelyn.
Yeah.
It seems like only Heather is aware of it. And Rain was very confused when Heather brought it up. But I see the kernel there now and I'm excited for it. I think.
No comment. Yeah. No comment. I can't say anything without saying anything from future arcs, but.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, Evelyn needs a Twill. Twill is very difficult to upset.
Yeah.
Like, she's a dummy. I love her. She's so, like, unaware and hot-headed and just like, yeah, are we doing a thing? Okay, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
No thoughts. Like, no brain cell. I think Evelyn needs that because Twill is... She's fairly decent with boundaries, but she's also not great with boundaries.
Right.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I like it.
Like, okay. So, Rain, right?
Yes.
Really cool character.
Yeah.
Awesome concept. Love that she's a sociopath. Actually, my favorite part about her.
Oh, yeah. We need to talk about that. You said you wanted to talk about that.
But, like, her as a character,
that archetype has never been my favorite.
Okay. The like Gideon archetype, I would call it.
Yeah, yeah. Like Gideon is fine.
The Gideon,
she's great.
Tainhu.
Exactly. Yeah,
the big butch bad butt woman.
Yeah. And like they're fine. I don't dislike the characters by any means. I don't mind them being there, but they're not necessarily the character to get me into a story.
Agreed.
That would be characters like Eevee, characters like Harrow,
the Harrow. Yeah, the Harrow Iante. Yep, exactly. Same. I think this is part of the reason Baru. Why you and I are doing this podcast together is because we like these characters. Like, this is what we bonded over. Anyway, the
Can
Max.
Can you just imagine if
Chloe.
We were not into those characters?
Oh, God.
We would be such boring people.
I know, right? Like, Rain is great, but she's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, I mean, and if you like that kind of character, that's great. Because sometimes we need some, you know, like, we need a simple, you know, easy to get person sometimes in life. But, like, yes. I like the weird, broken people better.
I like the wet rat. That's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's the character that
the
does
wet,
it.
Okay, we're calling that archetype the wet rat. Is it archetype or archetype? It's archetype, right?
I think it's archetype, yeah.
I just, like, totally second-guessed myself.
It doesn't matter. You can say whatever you want.
Well, it's because, like, some people
there
say
There are no rules
archmage,
in the English language.
Which I think is right, but some people say archmage, because I think they're thinking of
that's
archetype.
Fine too.
It's just like I just never know which one is the right one to use. Anyway, this
which
is
sounds better to the ear?
Archmage. I feel like that sounds like more powerful. Anyway.
Exactly. We're Eevee, just going off of vibes here.
Eevee's going to be an archmage someday. So there we go. That's how
it's
we connect
archmage,
it back.
Actually.
Only if we're talking about an arc. Okay.
But yes, Rain.
Yes.
Like, I do think that Heather and Rain make a wonderful couple.
Yes. Well, I mean,
that's fine.
Heather's also, she's not quite the drowned rat, because I feel like she's actually, when she starts getting some confidence for herself, she's actually, like, of the four of them, the most rational and, like, I don't know, like, she's very good at, like, just being the voice of reason sometimes in
Is
a room
she?
Full of arguing people.
Is
I mean,
she,
I'm thinking about when
she's just anxious
when Eevee and Twill are basically about to kill each other, and she gets them to like calm down and like have a decent conversation.
Yes,
at one time, and like
she does that constantly. Yeah, whenever they're like really in their heads and in their own world.
Yeah,
I think that she's their connection to reality.
Yes,
and that's very impressive. Like, I actually was thinking about this the other day, but how did Eevee and Rain, how did they, like, survive without Heather?
It's
beyond me.
Yes.
Not only how did they stay friends or are able to exist in the same space, but just, like, how did they survive? Because they're just always dialed up to 100 in their own ways. Whereas Heather, she is so embarrassed by taking up space.
Yeah.
That any kind of like deviation and anyone making a scene, anything, like any situation where she is put on display, she is so against it. And I really like that.
Yeah.
But she's definitely not a wet rat. Yeah.
Yeah, she's not a wet rat. She's a eager, young, slightly scared, but, like, ready to leave the nest rat.
she's like a chihuahua.
Okay. That's a good way of putting it. She is a chihuahua.
Yeah.
She's
but,
got
like,
a
with
big
anxiety,
bark.
With very deep anxiety.
Yeah, it's like, have you seen that TikTok where the dog's like, it's pretty hard to be good at things, but I'm pretty good at two things. One is snacks, the other is being nervous.
I have not, but now I want to.
Okay, I'll find it. I sent it to Becky. Anyway.
Okay. She would be the person to send it to. I'm not even mad that
I didn't get it. no offense, but that was like I saw it. I was like, this is the most Becky thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Not saying that you're like that, Becky, if you're listening. I'm just saying that you would like it.
Absolutely. It's crab time.
Yes, let's throw inside references that only our friends will get into this podcast.
Everyone knows crab time.
Everyone loves that when they have a podcast that you're listening to and it's like, oh, great. I don't get any of the references. I feel really like part of this conversation. Thanks for that.
But they're being included in our banter.
But they don't understand what that banter means. They're just like the characters in Catalepsis. They're just gazing in a little peephole at a larger universe of banter that we have. and this is a goofy episode.
It always will be a goofy episode.
I think it's when we really enjoy something, it gets goofy. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And by the way,
yeah,
they will meet Becky very soon. So
that's
maybe
true.
They will know the inside jokes.
We just have to bring up all the inside jokes. We'll start the episode for Nona by listing every inside joke between our friends so that they can be part
it's
of that conversation.
50 minutes of that, and then we get to Nona.
So let's start with Goblin and Joblin, and we'll go from there.
anyway, Rain.
Yes, Rain.
Not
to rain on your parade, but...
Because she's not, like, that engaging as a character to me personally,
yeah.
Every time she did something sociopathic, I was like, what? Excuse me? You have depth to you? Oh my god. And I love those moments. Because it's like, the first time that we have Heather and she is scared of something violent, of a violent situation, of something she has no control over, and then Rain is over there like, oh my god, I get to beat someone up. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
It's really great. And I really like how now all of Rain's smiles to me seem very unhinged. Like, I don't think Rain is able to smile normally.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, it's not necessarily on the page, but it's in the, like, it's between the lines, but it's like, oh, it's there. Definitely. Like, Rain is not regular. She's very much someone who plays by different rules, even though those rules somewhat resemble, like, humanity, which I really like.
Yeah. I like the implication that she's kind of just as monstrous as some of the...
I think she's more monstrous than anyone.
I mean, because I feel...
She's able to do things that they have the moral compass not to.
Yeah. It's really interesting to contrast her against Zhang or Prime and to think about, like, these two are, like, extra dimensional. Like, Zhang especially, who I feel like if Rain didn't have, like, the tether of, like, protecting her friends, she could be exactly like Zhang in some ways.
I think she'd be worse.
Yeah.
She's,
Because she'd revel in it more.
Yes, she would go for the chaos, whereas Zhang is very...
Zhang is a hunter.
Yeah, and very by the book.
Yes.
She has to be.
Okay, let's talk about... I'm trying to think what else, like, I found really interesting. Like, as someone who's fresher on this, like, what did you think of the cult? I want to ask what you... Like, what did you think of them?
I actually... Okay, so the cult to me was very cartoony, very diabolical, like...
That's the thing about Alexander. He's very, like...
He
shows
up...
He's
a comic book villain.
Yes. It's very, like, he shows up, he gives his, like, monologue. He's trying to force Heather into this, like, fancy device that he's made.
He talks a lot. Like, all he's done is talk.
Yes.
I don't think he's ever on the page without him, like, making a speech and speaking over people. And it's very, very much a caricature of, like, the villain.
Yes.
But I don't mind it. I actually think it worked really well here. I have high hopes for the next villains.
Yeah.
Like, so far, the uncle, we've only met him once in the parking garage.
Yeah.
I don't remember him whatsoever.
Yeah. Because that's his whole point. He doesn't want to be memorable.
Exactly. And all we know after the fourth arc is that he is a coward and he loves hiding and he hates attention and he does not want to be found or seen or anything.
Which
and
is
he's
smart.
Very, very scared.
Yeah, that's the right thing to be, is smart and scared, because...
Yes, because Alexander got taken out very quickly.
Yeah, and that's kind of the lesson that Evie was kind of setting up. Like, if people learn you're dabbling in this stuff, you don't have a long life expectancy. And that, yes, Alexander was the case whole in point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that single thing, that single conversation with the bald assassin that came to, like, deliver the message of the uncle is Amy. Wondering if Evie...
What's her name? Amy?
Amy Stack?
Amy Stack.
Yeah. And when she was like, ask Evie if she's okay with just sharing the space and kind of coexisting and not bothering each other. Like, that already, I have so much hope for the next arcs. Because now I'm excited to see, like, how that villain behaves. Because now I think we're past that first arc of, like, getting everyone acclimated to how this story is going to be. Here's this, like, something we're very familiar with. Yeah. A talky, nerdy white guy who wants power.
Yeah.
And who's very dramatic and is probably a theater major and, like, likes all of these props.
He's probably a business major. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like dual major theater business.
I think he was in theater in high school.
Yeah.
And then didn't pursue it in college.
Yeah.
Yeah, we figured him out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't mind it at all. I actually kind of liked it. It was very digestible because, you know, I'm still kind of getting used to the rules of this world. We had Lazzie in there, like, doing her thing.
Yeah.
A big part of that arc, especially arc 4, was Heather using her powers. And all of that is very new.
Right.
So I think having something so very cartoony to latch onto was interesting.
Yeah.
I will say I hope that it doesn't continue.
I think your hopes will be... fulfilled,
as I trust it. There's the evidence there that's like, yeah. Okay, now we're getting into the meat of it. There's definitely already, as I mentioned, the uncle, like, he's already way more interesting than Alexander, right. And we really haven't met him. Like, I don't know who he is. I don't know, but I am scared of him.
Yeah, he's definitely smarter than his nephew.
Yes, and as they've mentioned, he's the one who organized everything. He's the one who's able to kidnap these people off the street and make them into zombies and kill them. Alexander is definitely not able to do that. There's no way that he's the one who did any of that, and it was confirmed when I think Lazzie said it to them.
Yeah.
But she explained that, like, yeah, the uncle is the... He's the backstage manager. He's the Sarah.
God.
But already, like, I as a reader am very concerned. I'm very, very concerned. Because with Alex, he was actively out there seeking Heather and Evelyn out. And trapping them and attacking them.
Yeah, yeah.
This dude is not gonna do that. He's gonna do his business in private. And they're only gonna find out after he's gotten to the point where he can no longer be quiet. And that is horrifying.
Right.
And it's really cool. I'm excited. I like it.
Yeah. And then the big bad, the eye, is inscrutable in its motivations.
Yeah. So. I don't know. The eye is just like a vibe.
Does the eye even... Is the eye even really a villain? It kind of feels like... Can it be a villain if it's just like this force of supernatural nature?
Okay. I'm bad for this, but I can only really picture it as just, like, this eye with this very, like, deep voice going, like, I don't know, they're all just bothering me, I'm just chilling here, and all these humans are, like, looking at me and learning things they shouldn't. I can't take the eye seriously, it's very cartoony to me.
It doesn't help for me is that I always just imagine the eye of Sauron.
Just pictured the worst drawn, like, animated little cartoony 2D eye. It's not great.
I know, like, technically, I think it's not even really an eye. It's like, isn't it described as, like, more than that?
We can't comprehend it.
Again, it's one of those things.
It's supposed to be this,
we can't comprehend it.
Fantastical, awesome thing that... we really can't understand.
But all yeah. I see is a doodle of an eye that, like, a first grader would draw in their margin of their notebook. I don't know. I can't take it seriously, which is just, I think, saying a lot more about me than the story, because the story definitely gives it, like, magnitude and mystery, having it as this phenomena that's affecting our world so heavily, but also is such, like, an unseen thing to literally everyone but the people involved. It's just, like, it's really interesting and cool. I'm just me.
Yep. You're just, yeah. Okay.
Did we finish talking about Rain? I feel like we got interrupted by ourselves.
Did you have other thoughts on Rain? I was feeling good about it.
I think a lot of people probably... you're in the Discord, you tell me, but I feel like a lot of people would like Rain.
I do think, okay, you know what I'm going to do? We're going to count the number of Rain
emojis. Yeah, let's do that, because you sent me all the Priam ones, and I love them.
So, just for reference, there are 6 Priam emojis and mm-hmm. 1 sticker. There are 2 Rain emojis.
Okay.
There's a ton of Heather.
Well, yeah, of course. She's the main character.
Yeah, like a good dozen. There are 6 of Twill.
Okay.
3 of Eevee. Let's check Evelyn. Yeah, just 3 of Eevee. And a whole lot of Lozzie.
Lozzie deserves it.
Yeah.
She's the, what is it, Luna Lovegood of the yeah, story. I love her.
That's totally a good comparison. She is totally Luna Lovegood. Yeah, so Rain, actually, I think people do like her. I think there's a lot of fan art of her.
Yes, I've only seen fan art of Rain. I feel like...
And her abs, I feel like there's a lot
are
of...
Are there? That makes sense.
Or, like, muscular in general.
Like, visually, I just picture Vi from Arcane. Yeah. I'm trying to... Just, like, with dark hair. I don't know why. They seem like the same person to me, except for Rain is...
Another character in that archetype, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Vi is more of, like, a Rain and Twill together. Very clueless, but strong physically, and will fight you.
Yeah.
Regardless, like... But I don't think the story can work without Rain, either. I think she's integral to the plot. Like... She might not be the most important person, and I maybe won't notice that she's the last character I would notice on the page.
Yeah.
But I think it doesn't work without her.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I completely agree. There's no way to have this without Rain.
Yeah, because she
like,
is
like all
Heather's
the characters
tether.
Fit together so well.
Yeah.
What?
I just said she's Heather's tether. And that's funny to me.
I totally missed that. Oh, God.
I'm glad you did. Because you just caught me just, like, laughing at my own joke.
Wow.
But
I don't know
also,
if we should record after work anymore.
But also, I'm looking forward to her meeting Heather's parents. Because she's so chaotic.
Yeah.
And she has no filter because she is a sociopath, and she's only really... To me, it seems like she is just mimicking how humans do behave.
Right.
Like, nothing she does feels like she's doing it. It always feels like an act. And I think she's much more selfish than we see on the page, which I love. Yeah. Because it's like... Evelyn is hers, and Heather is hers, and she is so confident about that, like, I will do a little Arc 5 spoiler, just a little bit, but, like, Heather wonders why Rain is not jealous of her, like, of her friendship with Lozzie or whatnot, right? But to me, all that says is she is so confident that Heather is hers, and that Evelyn is hers, that she's not even afraid of them going anywhere. That's just a fact of life to her, that she has them, and they'll never leave. And I don't know, that makes her just a little bit more unhinged, in my opinion, but I love it. I don't know. Do you get similar vibe? Or
yeah,
is it...
No. I think part of it is that Rain doesn't get jealous because she doesn't get jealous of anything. Like, I feel like Rain just doesn't get jealous. Like, what does she have to be jealous of Evie or Twill or anything? Like, it's just because she knows who she is.
Not only that, she I don't think she's capable of that emotion.
Yeah. She, I think, is in a lot of ways like a shapeshifter. She becomes the person she needs to be to protect the person that she has attached herself to, that she's tethered herself to use your line. And that's Heather and Evie. And so for Evie, she's, you know, the best friend. Evie is not a very emotional person. Evie did not want a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Evie wants to have someone who's just going to let her read in peace. And Rain does that. Rain just lets Evie do her thing. There's many times where Heather is like, oh, what's Evie up to? And Rain's just like, she's reading, she's studying, she's doing her own thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and Rain's fine with that. And then, like, with Twill, I feel like Rain sees Twill. I mean, they're antagonistic at points, but I think part of that is that Rain is on some level training Twill, getting her ready. Like,
yeah, I get that.
It's like, I think about my cats playing with each other and like how they fight to like practice hunting techniques and stuff. And you can see them like practicing different parts of it. Like sometimes they're pouncing on each other, and other times they're like practicing their kicks on each other. And it's like, I feel like in a lot of ways that's like the twist. So I think Rain is just, she just becomes who she needs to be for that given person.
Yes. But also, in such a way that's very, like, that pays off towards her as well. But it's not like, in a necessarily negative way. Evelyn gave her a home, and Rain didn't have one at that point. Like, she was homeless. And in order to have shelter and food and companionship, she stuck with Evie. But also, real life seems boring to her. So Evie offers that. Then Heather is very helpless, and she likes it herself to some extent. She loves being the damsel in distress, and Rain likes that as well, because she gets to save her, and like that works for them perfectly as well. With Twill, now that you said it, I do see it. Before, it really felt like Twill was more into Rain than Rain ever could have been into Twill. Yeah. Maybe in the beginning when Twill first became the werewolf, and it was probably like a big thing in her life and she was probably like traumatized by it. Maybe then Rain was interested, but Twill is fine.
Yeah.
So that's not Rain's thing. So it seems like that relationship is one-sided, where Twill is excited to be around them, but they don't need Twill, or necessarily in Evelyn's case want her there. Which is fair. But I want Twill to be there always. She's great. Yes.
Twill is wonderful.
Twill actually reminds me of Ripley from Lumberjanes. I don't know.
I didn't think about it. Yeah. Yeah. There's a parallel there. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I feel like all this show is turning into is us comparing characters to other characters. But like, there's a lot of
three lines. We love tropes.
There's archetypes.
I mean, we could have had an hour worth of just talking about, like, Lovecraftian stuff and making it a lecture about, like, literature and whatnot, but this is way more fun.
I mean, I did get a little in about, like, what constitutes Lovecraftian, like, magic and whatnot at the beginning, but...
Yeah, but that's important.
And I love that stuff.
I like it.
Everything Lovecraftian.
It's very interesting. I do like the stories that he wrote, even though a lot of them feel gross in a lot of parts. Like, the concept is interesting. I like more so the media that comes out of it.
I was gonna say, I like the stuff that's inspired or derived from his works more than his works. Like, I've definitely, you know, read... Was it the Mounds of Madness and the Fish People?
Yeah, that's the one I read and remember the most. I cannot recall.
Shadow over Innsmouth? No.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
The writing is okay, but
the concepts he created are very interesting. So yes. I did like his stories. I did not like the racism. I did not like the weird, like, not going to get into it, whatever.
Yeah.
But I really do like the content that comes out of it. For example, the Critical Role people, they had Taliesin do a one-shot for Call of Cthulhu. And oh my god, Chloe, if you watch any of them, that's the one you should watch. It's just a one-shot. It is
Link me to it.
Amazing. Like, it was legitimately so fun and so creepy and interesting and great. But yes, this is... Thank you for introducing me to this. It's a very good story. It's taken me a while to get to, like, get through the five arcs. But that's because I don't have time for anything.
Yeah, and just for people who haven't read this, first of all, check it out. And it's a very long, like, it reminds me of Practical Guide to Evil or Parahumans that are these long, serialized internet novels. So there are currently 18 arcs, which will constitute book one.
So it's long.
Which will eventually have 21 arcs. And then there's going to be a book two. So this is an odyssey of an undertaking, but it is well worth it. It's okay. Just mechanically, it's very well written.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's free. I mean, it's free. I'm definitely going to become a patron because
there's an audiobook of the first four, as I mentioned, the first four arcs now available. I don't know that that's free, but because they got to pay the actor or whomever to read it.
I hope it's not free. No, it deserves all... The money.
There's also, you know, an ebook version. You can support the author. They've got a Patreon as well. And there's a Discord that's really neat. It has some great emojis.
Which I joined today.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for
it. Yeah. So, highly recommend checking it out. Catalepsis by Hazel Young. It's spelled, I realized we never spelled it, Katalepsis. And just, to do our plugs, we have social media. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest are at InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. You can email us at InMediaLez@gmail.com, and our website is InMediaLez.com. Thank you to everyone who interacts with us on social media, who reaches out, who likes, comments, subscribes, whatever it is you do. We really appreciate you listening, and thank you.
And we'll see you in the next one.
God bless you.
Cthulhu bless you. The Eye Watch is over you.
Oh, yeah.